Inside the Park by Kai Liesel, read by Silva Shadow Kitsune. Pain. That is the first thing Spock is aware of. The powerful drug has made the memory unnatural and too strong. Spock is slammed brutally up against it, an impassable barrier in front of Jim's true mind. Its sharp edges tear gashes along the broken bonds in Spock's already vulnerable psyche. The memory suddenly shoves him face first onto a rotting wasteland. Diseased, rancid grain squelches sickeningly beneath him, and the smell of the fungus on the decaying plants is nauseating. Spock quickly stands, needing to move his face away from such foulness. He looks around, and nearly retches. A corpse has been left out to rot in the field, not 15 feet away from him. Spock stumbles away as fast as he can. Night is falling all around him, and with no source of energy to light the planet, it is quickly getting dark. But he can see that he is just beyond the edges of what was once the human colony on the fourth planet of the Tarsis system. He hurries towards it. He moves without guidance, past the shells of empty buildings. If they were bonded, he'd have a thread to follow to find Jim. But they are not. So Spock can only listen closely as he canvasses the desolate streets of Jim's memory. The buildings are nothing but rubble. Everything that could possibly be burned for fuel or eaten is long gone. The whole place is eerily deserted. Thousands have been murdered, and the rest have long abandoned the colony. No child should ever see a place such as this, least of all Spock's precious Jim.
"Don't touch me!"
Spock's head whips around at the sound of that voice. It's younger and higher than the one he knows, but it resonates in Spock's core. "Jim," he whispers, forcing himself into a run. It hurts to run in the hostile atmosphere of the drug-fortified memory. He does it anyway. As he rounds the corner, he sees a small, very skinny figure in ragged clothes shoved by a large-armed and obviously better-fit adult in a guard uniform.
"Give him up!"
A 13-year-old Jim stumbles but stands his ground. He grits his teeth and says,
"No."
The guard shoves him again, harder. Jim nearly falls.
"It's the law, Kirk. Only the best get the food, and that Riley kid's not worth an ounce of yours. Codis ain't gonna let you keep living if you keep protecting worthless scum."
He leers at Jim and adds, "No matter how pretty you are." Jim glares at the guard. His hair is light blonde at this age, shaggy and long around his thin, dirty face. His eyes are ice blue and seem much too large.
"Fuck you," he spits out. "Watch your mouth."
The guard slaps Jim across the face, so hard that Jim cries out, and his skinny frame is sent flying to the ground.
Spock loses it.
With a snarl, he launches himself at the guard. The world becomes a blur of bruised flesh, crunching bone and red blood, almost black in the twilight. Spock is going to destroy this man, is going to end him, is going to break him into tiny pieces for hurting Jim. And then he hears it, the tiniest gasp. Spock is yanked out of his frenzy by the sound and jerks his head up. Jim is still on the ground, watching him in shock. And Spock realizes that he is beating a man bloody in front of a child who's no doubt seen too much violence already. He forces himself to stop and takes a deep breath before giving a careless neck pinch to the guard to ensure he will remain unconscious. He rolls off the guard and onto his knees. Jim flinches back.
"I will not hurt you," Spock says quickly.
Jim hesitates.
"I would never hurt you," Spock promises.
Jim bites his lip and slowly stands, never taking his eyes from Spock. Spock tenses, knowing he will have to give chase if Jim runs. But Jim doesn't run. Instead, he says politely,
"Thank you."
Spock's heart breaks a little, that Jim can still sound so civilized in such a horrible place, that this small figure has kept his humanity intact through a tragedy that has driven adults to madness.
"Are you a Vulcan?"
Jim asks. Spock stays kneeling on the ground. He doesn't want to scare the child in front of him.
"Yes, I am."
"There aren't any Vulcans on Tarsis." Jim is curious, not accusing. and his curiosity is the closest thing to a childlike expression Spock has yet seen on that weary face.
Where'd you come from?
Even in the twilight, Spock can see the darkening bruise on Jim's face, and his anger threatens to rise again. I came to rescue you. Jim looks more surprised by Spock's statement than any 13-year-old should ever have to be.
Why would you do that?
Spock cannot lie. Not to Jim's memory. Not to a skinny, hurting 13-year-old with haunted eyes. Because in the future, I am going to be very lonely, he says quietly, and I hope that you will rescue me back. Jim stares at him. Spock can see that too many before him have abused Jim's faith for Spock to be easily trusted. But Jim is hungry and exhausted and so very young. He wants to believe. He wants to trust Spock.
You have blood on your lip,
Jim finally says, and comes forward. He tears off a small piece from his already shredded shirt, and then, to Spock's surprise, Jim bravely kneels in front of him.
Here,
he says, handing Spock the rag with one thin arm. Spock takes it with a trembling hand. He wants to wrap this courageous, compassionate little being up in his arms and protect him from everything bad in the galaxy.
We have a hiding place, Jim tells him, and Spock is humbled to realize that Jim has decided to trust him. Me and Tommy and Kevin. You can come hide with us. I bet they'd like to see a Vulcan.
You have funny ears. They make you look like a cat. Is it true that Vulcans are telepaths? From this baby version of Jim, and from him alone, Spock will let the cat remark slide. Yes, we are. He can bring Jim out of this horror, and Spock is aching to leave, but Jim must come willingly. Would you like to see into my mind? Jim nods. Put your hand on my face, little one. Fingers, smaller than Spock is used to, clumsily touch Spock's cheek.
Like this?
That is fine. Spock carefully lifts his own hand to Jim's face. Brave as ever, Jim doesn't flinch as Spock arranges his fingers on Jim's melt points. Spock gazes into light blue eyes. My mind to your mind. My thoughts to your thoughts, he finished. He watched as those same blue eyes blinked in confusion.
Spock?
Spock let his eyes close with relief for the briefest second. He removed his hand from Jim's face and sat up on the bed. I am here, Jim. The searing burn of the melt has not receded, and Spock's mind throbbed painfully. It would take a trance, or much unshielded contact with Jim, to heal the psychic wounds caused by melding with a drugged mind. But Jim was out of the memory, and that was what mattered.
Spock, you were just... I was dreaming, or something.
Jim searched Spock's face. Spock tried to look innocent, but he must have failed spectacularly, because Jim suddenly pointed a finger at him and said,
That wasn't a dream, and you were really there, in my memories.
Spock saw no way to evade. Yes, I was. He swallowed. Mitchell drugged you with Recomedone. It forced you to relive a memory. I used a mill to bring you out of it.
Fuck. Fuck, fuck, fuck!
Jim's expression was devastated. A moan escaped his lips. You were never supposed to see that, he said brokenly. Spock suppressed his despair. I apologize for the invasion of your privacy, he said stiffly. It was not my intention to overstep your personal boundaries, but it was necessary to.
Jim shook his head. It's not about privacy, he said. I like your telepathy.
A small frisson of something golden and joyous went through Spock at that.
It's just...
Jim screwed his eyes shut, seemingly unable to look at Spock. You're too beautiful to ever have to see something so ugly. That was too much for Spock to bear. No, Jim, he said, leaning down over Jim's prone body. Nothing about you is ugly. Jim suddenly grabbed Spock by the shoulders and shoved, hard enough to take Spock by surprise and flip him over onto his back.
Everything about me is ugly, Jim snarled as he rolled on top of the startled Spock. My family, my history, my criminal record, fucking
catharsis! And suddenly he was kissing Spock fiercely, so intensely that it was stealing Spock's breath away. Spock could feel Jim's emotions burning beneath his skin painfully. Shame, self-loathing, guilt. Jim, Spock tried to say through the harsh kiss, but even with the negative emotions, Spock's mind clung desperately to the contact, to the touch of Jim's lips. Jim's hand was working at the buttons of Spock's pants now, quick and sure. And you're the most beautiful thing I've ever seen, he whispered against Spock's lips, yanking open Spock's zipper. You're so pure and so perfect, and every time I touch you, I feel like I'm defiling you with my dirty hands and my ugliness, but I can't stop myself. I want you so much. Jim, Spock said more urgently. But then he gasped, as Jim grabbed his cock in one sure hand and stroked it with practiced movements. Jim clearly wanted Spock hard, and Spock was helpless against his body's desires to obey, powerless to stop his body from arching into Jim's touch. And then you do these things. You thrash Gary for talking shit to me. You come after me when I'm hurt. You rescue me from my own goddamn memories. I don't deserve you, but I can't resist you. I've never met anyone like you. Spock was rock hard by this point. Jim moved to straddle his stomach, still grasping Spock's dick in his hand. When bare legs touched his stomach and sides, Spock realized with shock that Jim had managed to take off his own pants at some point. Jim, what is the meaning of your actions? Jim ignored him and lined up their bodies. Spock suddenly understood what was about to happen. No, he snapped, and with an enormous effort forced himself to stop Jim, seizing him by the upper arms and preventing movement. Spock craved Jim with burning need, but he would not do this. Without lubricant, you will hurt yourself. Jim rolled his eyes. He broke out of Spock's grasp, turning sideways, and bent his head toward Spock's dick. Spock got Jim's intentions loud and clear. Kroika! He hissed, and using his full strength, he lifted Jim up and tumbled him over. Jim gasped as he fell through the air before hitting the mattress on his back. Spock rolled and pinned him immediately with hands on Jim's shoulders. Saliva is not lubricant. But, Spock narrowed his eyes, I will not hurt you in such manner. Jim glared up at him. Maybe I want you to. You do not. You are emotionally compromised, Spock informed him, and I will not take advantage of you in such a state. Jim squirmed against Spock's grip. I'm not. You were just forced to relive one of the most horrific tragedies in human history, as was I, and if I am compromised by what I saw, I believe that you are too. Jim went still beneath him. Shit, he said with quiet realization. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. He bit his lip, and Spock was forcefully reminded of the 13-year-old he had seen on Tarsus. Jim was not really so much older now. I didn't think. Of course you were compromised by what you saw. And of course you don't want rough sex right now. Fuck, I'm such an asshole. I can't believe I just... Spock kissed him, very gently. You are still hurting from your memory. Jim blinked, and when he reopened his eyes, they had a wet sheen to them. I'm sorry, Spock. I wanted to forget it again. To feel something else. Spock kissed his forehead. I know, Ashayam. But I would prefer that what you feel in its place is not more pain. Jim made a broken sound. I hate those memories, he said. I hate them. Tarsus was... He shut his eyes tightly, and Spock knew he was reliving horrors beyond what even Spock had seen. So many died, Spock. Kodos decided my ass got to live, for whatever his insane eugenics reasons were. But so many others... It was horrible. Spock stroked his hair, wishing he could meld them. It would both soothe Spock's psychic wounds and take away Jim's pain. But Spock was sure that, as a human, Jim would certainly prefer talking to a mental linking of their minds. I just wish it would go away, Jim said, scrubbing at his eyes angrily with his fist. but it fucking haunts me. I assumed my crew wouldn't trust the authority figure, because thanks to Tarsus, I sure as hell never do. And I can't believe after all these years, I still eat like a starving freak. Anger thrummed through Spock that Jim had been made to feel thus. Your crew trusts you explicitly, and you have earned the right to eat however you please, he said, with a calm he did not quite feel. And when I see Gary Mitchell again, I shall put him beyond even the help of our good Dr. McCoy. Jim's gaze snapped at Spock. His eyes were shimmering, the blue ridiculously bright. Gary's not the problem. I am. I can't eat right, can't relate to my crew right. Hell, I can't even fuck right. One moment of emotional compromise is not an excuse for my behavior. Tarsus doesn't have the right to hurt you, too, Jim said fiercely. Not you. Never you. Jim, stop, Spock said firmly. You are offering your boyfriend intercourse. I am hardly hurt by it. Desist from punishing yourself. But I'm... If you do not stop your self-flagellation, I will pick you up again. As Spock had hoped, his words shocked Jim.
You'll what?
I will pick you up, Spock said firmly, and I will put you in my lap, and I will not release you. Jim stared at him. And your Dr. McCoy will return and find you trapped in my lap, and, I believe the phrase is, he will never let you live it down. Jim's eyes widened. That is an amazing threat, he said, sounding impressed. And I assure you, I would enjoy carrying it out, Spock warned. I would not allow anyone to hurt you. This includes yourself. The tiniest of smiles crossed Jim's face then, and he looked at Spock with awed, still wet eyes. Where did I find you? You did not find me, Spock said, with finality, pleased to have freed Jim from his negative headspace. He folded his arms on Jim's chest and laid down on top of him, the contact a balm for the increasing ache in his mind. I found and claimed you for my own. Jim actually smiled. Lucky me, then. His expression grew serious again. You should never have had to see that, Spock. Never. I would never have told you. I would never have made you suffer through it, too. No, I should not have witnessed that, Spock agreed. But neither should you have. No one should have to see such suffering. Jim closed his eyes very tightly. For several moments, they were quiet. Finally, Spock asked with some trepidation, but needing to know, what happened in your real memory, with the guard? I ran away, Jim said ruefully. Did you escape successfully? Yeah, I was fast as a kid. He smiled self-deprecatingly. I was kind of a troublemaker, so I had to be. Spock nuzzled his jaw, feeling Jim's rather downy stubble. He lowered his shield to let Jim's emotions flow more freely into him through their touching skin. If you had tried to run from me, I would have caught you. I know you would have. The words were said sweetly, accompanied by a tender roll of gratitude, and, for the first time that Spock had ever felt, a deeply buried but unquestionably present sense of safeness emanating from Jim. Jim felt safe because of Spock. Spock inwardly reveled in creating Jim's security as it streamed into him in his battered mind. Who are the Tommy and Kevin you refer to in the memory? Thomas Layton and Kevin Riley. Other kids on Tarsus. Tom was about my age, but Kevin was only 4. Spock could deduce, from what he'd seen, that Codis had not intended to spare Layton and Riley, and that Jim had shared his food and risked his own privileged position to keep them alive. Jim's still positive feelings made Spock think Jim had been successful, so he inquired further. Where are they now? Tom's a scientist at the colony on Planet Q. Kevin's on Earth. Jim looked like a proud older brother at the mention of Kevin. Kevin's mother was on off-planet assignment and survived Tarsus. They live in Ireland. He's enrolling in Starfleet next year. Jim's expression became similar to the fond look he got when Chekhov claimed something was invented in Russia. I may be able to get him for the Enterprise when he graduates. I am sure he would like that, Spock said. Flora is very young. You were very brave to protect him. Jim swallowed. He didn't have anyone else. Kudos murdered his father, and he was barely more than a baby. As were you.
I was 13.
You were a child, much too young to suffer such ugliness.
My whole life was ugly before Starfleet, Spock,
Jim said seriously. He pulled Spock's head up, holding his face with both hands so he could look Spock in the eyes. You need to know this. I'm just a delinquent with a famous dad who caught a break one night in a bar. If you knew what I'd done...
I have read your record, Spock said dismissively, pressing his cheek into Jim's cool hand to get more contact.
Jim's eyes went wide. You read my record? He repeated hoarsely. Naturally. When I had you brought up on disciplinary charges at the academy, it was a required step in the procedure. I fail to see how said record should concern me.
Jim stared at him.
But I'm a repeat offender. I got arrested 3 times.
You were arrested for driving your stepfather's car off a cliff after he threatened to hit your brother. Spock ticked off Jim's other crimes, while trying not to be too obvious in his quest for more of Jim's touch. You were arrested for possession of illegal contraband, for trying to grow a type of plant in your backyard that is food to Andorians but causes intoxication in humans. And you were arrested for assaulting another man because he expressed desire for intercourse without the consent of a female. As I have said, your record does not concern me.
Jim blinked.
And while we are speaking of records, it may interest you to know, Spock said, with a touch of pride, that I am considered quite a rebel myself.
You?
Yes. Well, Spock amended, a rebel by Vulcan standards, but a rebel nonetheless.
Jim shook his head. And here I thought I was the bad boy taking advantage of the ambassador's innocent son.
Not so innocent as you might assume, Spock warned him, trying not to squirm in pleasure as Jim's affection came pouring through his hands into Spock. I assure you, I have plans for you, Jim, that are not innocent in the slightest. They are actually quite devious.
Please, Jim grinned and released Spock's face. You haven't had a devious thought in your life.
Not true, Spock objected, shifting to lay between Jim's leg and returning his head to his own folded arms. I plan to capture you and make you mine.
Jim wrapped a bare leg around Spock's still-clothed one. Oh, how horrible, he deadpanned. He reached for one of Spock's ears and petted it tentatively. Spock nearly purred. He leaned into the touch, basking in Jim's attention. Of course, to be devious, the plan assumes I'm not already yours.
Spock's stomach fluttered pleasantly. Even if Jim was only teasing, he enjoyed hearing it. Someday, perhaps, it would not be only jokes. I would make you mine beyond what humans can imagine.
Sounds nice, Jim said, and there was no way he could have known how Spock's lonely mind devoured his words. You're going to turn me into your telepathic love slave, right? He said playfully. Get me addicted to your mind control powers?
Spock stroked his finger over Jim's meld points covetously, drinking in every drop of fondness Jim had for him. Affirmative. Among other things. Jim's eyes were shining again, but a different shine than before. A happy, intimate shine that Spock could have contentedly drowned in.
Tell me then, scary Vulcan, what would you do to me in this devious plan of yours?
Spock was losing himself into Jim. I would cradle your mind with mine, and keep it close, so our minds would never be parted. Spock whispered, still stroking his fingers over Jim's cool skin, growing intoxicated by Jim's affection, letting himself get carried away. I would link your mind to mine, so that I may cherish thee for all time, our minds touching and always touched. Jim looked at him then, with eyes that were suddenly much, much too astute.
Is that how I would rescue you from your loneliness?
Spock froze.
He very nearly panicked. Then the door slid open, and McCoy strode in, a tray of food in hand. And then Spock, in a very inward, stoic Vulcan way, really did panic. Damn it, Jim! Kirk winced, taking in his best friend's flaring nostrils and reddening complexion.
Hi, Bones, he said. I'm all better. You. McCoy slammed the tray down on Kirk's desk.
Spock, you horny, green-blooded hobgoblin. Care to tell me why Jim's already awake?
For someone who purported not to have emotions, Spock was really damn good at looking shifty.
Kirk looked at him suspiciously.
Why is Bones surprised that I'm awake, Spock?
Did he meld with you, Jim?
McCoy demanded. Kirk nodded. Spock was not meeting his eyes.
Was he not supposed to?
Perhaps I should allow you to a moment alone, in the interest of doctor-patient confidentiality? Spock said smoothly, rolling off Kirk, but carefully leaving a blanket in place.
Freeze, Vulcan! McCoy snapped.
Jim's medication was going to wear off in 6 hours, tops. It wouldn't have hurt him, and you damn well knew that melding with Jim was dangerous as hell for you.
Kirk's eyes bulged. Spock! He snapped. You didn't tell me it was dangerous!
He threw the blanket off and went to stand.
Spock, you were...
Jim, for fuck's sakes! McCoy sputtered. Where are your pants, man?
What?
Oh, yeah. Kirk belatedly remembered he was still half-dressed. But what's the big deal? You're my doctor and he's my boyfriend. It's nothing both of you haven't seen, but...
Put your damn pants on!
McCoy ordered, just as Spock said. I must insist that you dress yourself, Jim. They gave each other dirty looks.
Okay, sheesh,
Kirk muttered, reaching for his boxer briefs and slipping them on.
Boyfriend? McCoy asked Spock, raising a brow.
I knew it. I knew you were into him.
Congratulations. Jim's never had a boyfriend before.
And if you screw this up and hurt him, I'll hypo you with Andorian shingles until your eyeballs bleed.
Bones! Don't kiss Spock the southern dad with a shotgun routine!
I would never hurt Jim, Spock said, sounding offended. And I wish to inquire exactly how many times you have seen him without clothing, and what precisely were the circumstances.
Spock! Don't give Bones the jealous boyfriend routine!
McCoy huffed.
Jim would have been fine. Why'd you risk the meld, Spock?
The memory Jim was reliving was a singularly unpleasant one, Spock said shortly, folding his arms over his chest. I was unable to allow him to continue experiencing it until the medication wore off. McCoy looked like he might possibly have softened at this.
Wasn't that a bit illogical?
Jim's suffering is never logical, Spock said, and Kirk thought Spock sounded almost pouty at being called illogical.
In a very Vulcan way, of course.
McCoy sighed, defeated.
All right, he said grumpily. You're off the hook. For now.
He pointed at Kirk.
But you can just sit tight and let me check you out.
Kirk made a face.
But don't you start with me, McCoy warned, tricorder in hand. Spock, bring him his dinner.
Kirk sighed and submitted to being scanned by McCoy. Spock's warm eyes met his as Spock carried the tray over. This is quite an eclectic offering of foods, Dr. McCoy. Kirk peered at the tray as Spock sat next to him on the bed. Fried chicken, mashed potatoes, and peach cobbler. Good southern comfort food. There was also a bowl of borscht, some sausage-shaped haggis, Korean barbecue beef and kimchi, and several pieces of butter chapati flatbread.
Wow, he said, realizing how hungry he was.
Breakfast seemed a distant eternity ago.
When the crew found out that Mitchell had made off with their drugged captain right beneath their noses, they were pretty devastated, McCoy explained. They all wanted to contribute something.
It wasn't their fault, Kirk said empathically, taking the tray onto his lap.
Gary can be really convincing when he wants to be.
Damn straight he can, McCoy agreed. Uhura recognized him from the Academy and knew he was a Starfleet officer and a friend of yours. McCoy made the air quotes around the word.
They had no reason not to trust him. But you can be damn sure no one's ever going to pull a stunt like that in front of your crew again. They're out for Mitchell's blood, especially little Chekhov.
Kirk laughed at McCoy's hyperbole. He picked up a piece of chicken and faltered.
I still don't know how to eat right. What if I really do discuss Spock with how I eat? And Spock's just too classy to say anything.
The hand holding the chicken trembled.
What if he's so grossed out that it drives him away?
Kirk was so hungry, but he was too nervous to even take a bite.
What if...
Spock tore off a piece of the chapati flatbread and poked it into Kirk's mouth. Eat, Jim, he said sweetly, with eyes that said he knew exactly what Kirk had been thinking. "Do not worry yourself so." He raised an eyebrow and whispered, "Or would you prefer to eat in my lap?" Kirk nearly choked at the reminder of Spock's threat, but he smiled gratefully at Spock for the much-needed reassurance, even as he obediently chewed and swallowed. The bread was delicious, reminding him of a whole wheat tortilla. He dug into the rest of the meal.
"Well, your readings are normal," McCoy said, standing and putting away the tricorder. "Looks like I'll be okay, so I'm going to head back to medical. But do your doctor a favor and get some rest tonight, okay?"
He narrowed his eyes at Spock.
"That means you keep your Vulcan hands off him and let him sleep."
"Bonf,"
Kirk protested through a mouth of haggis.
"Nah, baby.
Those of us who have to keep saving your ass would beg to differ," McCoy tossed over his shoulder as he walked to the door. "And you're welcome."
Kirk stuck his tongue out at McCoy's back as the door slid closed behind him. Spock looked amused by Kirk's antics. "It does not help your case, Jim, when your response is exceedingly childish."
"So's your face." Kirk was working on the Korean barbecue now.
"Your features are more childlike than mine," Spock said, scooping mashed potatoes up with his finger and holding it to Kirk's lips. Kirk sucked Spock's finger into his mouth and enjoyed the little hitch of breath it caused.
"Don't be so literal,"
he said around Spock's finger.
Spock pulled his finger out of Kirk's mouth, scooped up more potato, and raised it to Kirk's lips again. Kirk obligingly licked it off. And then Spock did it again, and again. And then somehow, he commandeered the utensils from Kirk's hands and took over feeding Kirk completely. Kirk, swallowing a spoonful of borscht fed to him by Spock, finally told him,
"You know, I'm really fine. You don't have to."
"I wish to," Spock said, not quite meeting his eyes. "But hush, little one, and let me feed you."
Kirk, recognizing the endearment from the memory, colored slightly. And he might have complained, but there was something to the set of Spock's shoulders that made Kirk think that Spock had been more affected than he was letting on by the dangerous mold and the trip down Kirk's least pleasant memory lane. So he let it slide this time. When every last bite of the strangest meal Kirk had eaten in a long time was gone, Spock took the tray from him and stood up, carrying the tray over to the desk. Kirk stood also and followed Spock.
"So," he said awkwardly, feeling a little silly in his uniform tunic and boxer briefs next to a fully dressed Spock. He wanted Spock to stay, but that seemed presumptuous. They'd been together such a short period of time and...
"May I stay with you tonight?" Spock asked, without turning around. Kirk's heart leapt.
"Yes," he blurted. "Of course you can. You can do whatever you want with me." Then he winced.
"That might have come out wrong." "I find no fault with your statement." Spock's voice was warm, but he was still looking at the surface of the desk. Kirk walked up close behind him. Spock was staring at one of the pads Kirk had been reading. On Duo Triticale. He was tracing a finger over the text on the surface of the pad.
"You planning to do more research now?"
Kirk asked. He shook his head and stripped off his gold tunic, so he was dressed in just a black undershirt and his black briefs.
"You Vulcans are insatiable. Do you never sleep?"
"We sleep." Kirk suddenly noticed Spock's hand was trembling.
"Spock!"
He grabbed Spock's hand in his and turned Spock to face him. He scrutinized Spock's face, noticing for the first time that his first officer-turned-boyfriend looked exhausted. His eyes were half-lidded, his fringe was mussed, and Kirk almost got the impression that his ears were drooping like a sleepy cat's.
"Are you okay?"
"Please do not concern yourself with my state," Spock said quickly. "You are the one who..."
"That's a no if I've ever heard one,"
Kirk said, closing the distance between them. He cupped Spock's face between his hands and watched Spock's eyes flutter shut.
"Do you need bones?"
"No," Spock said, and leaned forward into Kirk's touch, like it was the most welcome thing he'd ever felt. "What I need for healing is already present." Kirk furrowed his brow at Spock's cryptic statement. Worried about Spock, Kirk screwed up his courage then and did something he'd been wanting to do for a while now. He pressed a soft kiss to Spock's forehead.
right above where his pointy eyebrows came together. Just how dangerous was that meld you did on me?
There is risk inherent in every meld, was Spock's evasive answer.
You answer me, Kirk said sternly.
Spock kept his eyes closed. The drug's effect made the memory both unnaturally strong and hostile to my psychic presence, he said reluctantly.
Translation? The meld kicked my telepathic ass, Jim.
Kirk pet Spock's hair gently. Spock was practically melting into him.
Baby, he admonished gently.
And it might have been a strange thing to call an adult Vulcan, but after Spock had the cheek to call him Little One outside the memory, Kirk figured he could just deal.
Why did you meld with me?
When I realized what you were reliving, I...
Jim, I could not let you relive the memory of genocide on Tarsus IV alone.
Kirk bit his lip and wondered, not for the first time, what on earth could he have done right in his life to deserve such devotion from this amazing alien?
Come to bed. Spock nodded.
They settled together in Kirk's bed, on their sides facing each other. The lights were very dim, and Kirk had put a couple extra blankets on Spock's side. He could just make out Spock's features in the darkness. He seemed to be watching Kirk, and aching with some kind of unexpressed longing. Kirk hesitated.
After what you saw, I don't know if you'll want to, he began uncertainly. And I know it's ugly in there, but,
if you want, you can do that meld thing.
Spock's hand was glued to his face before he could finish his sentence. After a second, as he had before, Kirk felt a curious sensation, like his thoughts and emotion had just been pulled over Spock like a blanket. Spock finally relaxed, giving the quietest sigh, and Kirk felt the tension begin to drain out of him. Kirk put a tentative arm around Spock's waist. He was still so new to this cuddling thing. If it wasn't sexual touch, he couldn't help but worry that Spock wouldn't like how Kirk touched him, that he was doing it all wrong.
You can do me no wrong, Ashayam.
Kirk twitched a little at Spock's rather hoarse voice. Spock's fingers dug into his face, as if afraid of being dislodged. Kirk quickly stilled, petting Spock's hand reassuringly.
Reading my mind, are you? You know that's cheating.
I do not recall promising to play fair.
Kirk grinned, finding Spock's response adorable. As a rush of fondness for Spock went through him, Spock made a soft sound and warmed closer, onto Kirk's side of the bed.
Curious, Kirk asked, so is my mind like your teddy bear or something now?
Kirk suddenly saw something in his mind's eyes, a large, fat, furry bear-like thing with fangs.
A Salat? He said, not recognizing the word. I didn't know Vulcans had pets. That's so cute. Wait, did I just read your mind?
Yes, Spock admitted.
Kirk could feel his embarrassment and knew that the fact that Spock was experiencing embarrassment at all spoke volumes about his exhaustion.
I have dropped my telepathic shields. Completely.
His speech pattern was oddly stilted.
You are.
You comfort me. But if you... Kirk kissed him again, more confidently, right on the fringe on his forehead.
It's fine.
Spock seemed to like the touch of bare skin, so he experimentally stuck the hand on Spock's waist beneath Spock's shirt, splaying it out against Spock's warm skin.
And Spock did like it. Kirk picked up on that right away.
This link is so cool, he said, awed.
Spock's pleasure at Kirk's words streamed into Kirk, rich and intense.
I am gratified, Spock began, his voice raw,
his words sounding awkward and completely unlike his usual eloquent self. And Kirk suddenly understood.
Hey, shh, it's okay, he said softly.
You don't have to talk. I can understand you just fine through the link.
But Spock seemed to be really struggling now to form words. You are human. You need speech.
Says who? Kirk asked, and got a heady rush of gratitude from Spock in return. He pulled Spock closer, careful not to jostle Spock's hand on his face, as he guided Spock's head to his chest.
Now shut up and come here, he said,
wrapping both arms around Spock, and delighting when he could hear Spock practically purr in his head. I think I'm finally getting the hang of this cuddling thing. The end. To be continued in Rounding Third.